Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller here talking about fall color for your garden today with our guest, Laura Jull, Professor Extension Specialist for Woody Ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, and she will answer your questions about flowers and shrubs and give you some suggestions for fall color. How's your garden looking now? Is it looking a little dull in the fall? Maybe you have some questions about a plant in your landscape? Call in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry. I enjoy being on your show.
It's always a lot of fun. What are some of your favorite plants for fall blossoms?
For fall color, or fall flowers?
Let's say fall color.
Okay. For fall color, of course, one of my favorites is sugar maple, our native state tree. It's phenomenal fall color. Unfortunately, sugar maple doesn't like most urban conditions. It does need a good soil and some moisture. And then, of course, another one that's my favorite is our native black gum or Nissa sylvatica. Black gum, it's also known as sour gum. That tree has got the best fall color I've ever seen. It's a little bit harder to grow, a little bit harder to find, but it is one that we have a beautiful one at the UW-Madison Arboretum right by next to the Visitor Center. And whenever that is in peak fall color, it's just
breathtaking.
Amazing. Yeah. And then, of course, there's a number of other woody plants that have great fall color. I do like Fothergilla, and that's the common name, Fothergilla, the dwarf or the large one. Either one has a combination of bright orange red to orange yellow fall color, and it's late, so you get to enjoy it in late October into November after everything else is done.
What about the fall flowers?
Fall flowers, there's number of things that I particularly like. One is a herbaceous perennial, or actually a couple are herbaceous perennials, and one of them is the Montrose White Calla Mint, and that is Calla Mintha Nepeta Montrose White. And it was a selection from the southern U.S. It's not native, but it is a complete bee hotel.
Oh.
It attracts pollinators for miles, and I have several in my yard, and they're always full of, you know, bees and pollinators. And we do need to have bees in our landscape because that's what helps us get fruit.
Yeah.
The bees are often used for pollination. Also, your aromatic asters. It's not your typical asters you see in the store, but they are available. I've gotten mine from a local nursery here. And one's called Radon's Favorite Aster, and the other one, I'm drawing a blank here. They're very closely related, and it's Aster oblongifolius, and it's called the aromatic aster, and that is just an amazing plant. It blooms very late. It starts to bloom like late September, October, and it can last in bloom for about a month. So it gives butterflies something that they can go to as they're migrating.
And aromatic, so
leaves are aromatic.
Oh.
If you rub them.
Okay. I was wondering about that because I wasn't familiar with something being aromatic unless...
I remember the cultivar, October Skies.
So
either October Skies or Radon's Favorite. Either one of those are very nice. And not to, quickly just to mention, they're both are mildew resistant. Unlike some of the other asters that get rust and mildew, these are pretty clean.
Well, already some callers online, and Vera in Dousman has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Vera. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a kind of a big patch of May apples, and you know, of course, they die out.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something I can plant in that area also, you know, so that when they die out, the other plant is there, but it doesn't take over and kill my May apples?
Sure. So I imagine with May apples, that's like a spring ephemeral.
Right.
And so you have a wooded area?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there's a variety of native plants you can use in there after the May apple. It depends what color and, you know, if you want just a foliage type plant. There's many things, ground covers you can use. Are you looking for shrubs or?
No, mainly a plant, like a flower.
A flower. Okay. There is our native Solomon seal. Polygonum, it's the variegated one I particularly like. That one will stay perennial. That won't die back. That's a phenomenal plant.
I have some, and I could probably transplant some of that.
Yeah. There's that. Trying to think of some other native understory plants that aren't spring ephemerals. A lot of them are.
Yeah.
In terms of herbaceous. There's always native ferns would look beautiful in a woodland. And they come up after some of these spring ephemerals have started to die back. And, of course, one of my favorite spring ephemerals, though it does die back, but I just love it, is trillium.
Mm-hmm.
Trillium and bluebells.
Okay.
Yeah, those are really nice. But
thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Or you can post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. We're visiting today with Laura Jow. Laura is a professor and extension specialist in woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. And she always loves to have you call in with your questions. You can also email us. And if you've got some photos, maybe you've got some nice color, fall color photos from your garden, I hope you'll post those on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And let's take a question from Mary in Waupaca next. Hi, Mary. Oops, let's see. First, I have to make sure I get you on, Mary. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I have a question. I have a woody ornamental, I guess. I picked it up in New Mexico. It is a high desert pomegranate. And it's about 4 years old. I have been taking it out every spring and bringing it back in the house in the winter. Now, the label, when I bought it, because it's a high desert and it gets quite cold there, it said its roots were hardy to 0 degrees. And I am wondering if there's any way that I could possibly overwinter this thing outside in a protected area, sheltered area. I figure the growth will die back, but then it'll spring up again from the roots if it doesn't go below zero. And I'm wondering if Laura has any advice for possibly trying to overwinter this thing outside.
Sure. Is this a traditional pomegranate? I'm not sure what a high plains pomegranate is.
A high desert. It's
a woody
pomegranate. Yes, definitely
okay.
Woody. It produces a pomegranate,
okay.
A fruit, and but it's hardy for the high desert. And
yeah.
All I can go on is that the label said the roots were hardy.
Yeah, I wouldn't tempt it. It's not going to be hardy here. It just wouldn't. You know, yeah, it may die back. It's just like butterfly bush. Butterfly bush is supposed to be hardy zone 5. Well,
right.
If you get it to survive at all, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
A lot of times they'll die back and just not come back. So if you really like this plant, I would still bring it in the winter.
Well, it does have beautiful fall foliage,
mm-hmm.
and then it drops its
yeah.
leaves. I had heard stories that Italians in Chicago would heal in their fig trees.
Yep.
And they would overwinter figs by actually healing them over.
Yeah, they would bury them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought, well, maybe something like that would work here, but probably not.
Well, we have all that alternate freezing and thawing, just like Chicago. That's no different. But if you really like this plant, that one is really not hardy here.
Not really.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Mary. Patrick in Madison up next. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, I have a question. We just bought a new house, and we bought some of those hanging plants, baskets, I'm sorry. And on the front of the house is facing west, and we're wondering what sort of fall flowers or plants might be good in those hanging plants, to hanging baskets, to kind of dress up the house a little bit with some color.
Okay, so they're annuals. How do they look? Do you know?
The baskets themselves?
Yeah, right now.
Yeah, they're brown. You know, they're kind of bowl-shaped in the bottom, and they hang.
No, the plants. Sorry, the plants.
I'm sorry, we have no plants in them right now.
Oh, okay. All right, okay. Well, most annuals, as soon as we get a frost, they're going to be clipped by the frost. And we usually get a frost towards late September. Are you looking for something that would extend longer?
Ideally, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as possible.
Yeah.
Well,
that would rule out a lot of annuals, though. Some of them are a little more frost tolerant, light frost, that is. And geraniums is one of them. But geraniums don't trail. They don't, unless it's an ivy geranium. And even that, you get a, you know, 20-degree temperature at night in early October, they're going to be crisp. Usually, you know, if you have baskets that are on like a planter that you're not hanging and you're looking for something with color, there's always mums. But again, these are not trailing. You can go with asters. You can go with a lot of different ornamental grasses. There's ornamental kale and ornamental cabbage. There's all sorts of choices, but these are not trailing plants. And off the top of my head, I can't think of a hardy trailing plant that you could put in baskets. I'm just drawing a blank there. Mm-hmm. All the ones I know of are annuals, and they'll die in frost, heavy frost.
Yeah. My hanging baskets don't hang all that high, so I've got some baskets out there that don't have any trailing plants in them, but still look pretty good.
Yeah, I've got begonias in mine, and they just amaze me, these angel wing begonias. Or dragon wing begonias. They have bloomed and bloomed and bloomed all summer.
Yeah. So another thing to think about. Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Laura Jell, our guest from the University of Wisconsin Extension and the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, our guest for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Right now on Garden Talk, visiting with Laura Jell from the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison and UW-Extension. One open line at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. If you've got some nice garden photos, we'll always love to see them as well. Bill and Racine up next with a question. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, thanks for taking a call. Say, we planted 20 years ago this flowering crab, and it's really been beautiful, still is. And after a couple of years, you know, it had leaf drop, or at least that's what they told me. So they said, you know, apply this chemical. I think it was Dalkin. I still do it off and on. Has the methodology changed a little bit, or am I still supposed, can you just continue using this? And I guess you had to do it before right when the buds were coming out.
Okay, it sounds like apple scab, which is very, very common on crab apples and apples as well. And yes, you are right. The time to apply a product is right during leaf expansion and every 2 weeks after that. My solution personally is, you know, this is kind of drastic, but get rid of the plant and plant something else that's not susceptible.
There are scab-resistant varieties.
Yes, and I have a fact sheet on scab-resistant crab apples, and it's on the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic website, as well as the, I think it's wisc.horticulture.edu. It's either horticulture.wisc.edu or vice versa. Brian Huddleston has got another really fine X-Series publication also on the Plant Disease Diagnostic website. If you just type in UW-Madison Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and he has hundreds of fact sheets posted that many of us have done over the years. With crab apples, yes, there are disease-resistant crab apples, but in the years 30 years I've been in this industry, some of them are disease-resistant, and then they become susceptible. And a lot of that has to do with the pathogen itself. The fungus mutates, or there's different strains of apple scab. And, you know, if you really don't want to have apple scab, plant a service berry. Service berries are beautiful. Yeah, they can get a little bit of leaf spot and so on, but the apple service berry is a wonderful plant, and it produces beautiful white flowers, and it has some of the tastiest fruit. It reminds me of small blueberries, and they occur in June, followed by phenomenal fall orange-red fall color. So that's a plant that gives you multi-season interest. I have one in my yard. I have Autumn Brilliance in my yard, but there's a bunch of them. And they're really nice landscape plants. It's a native hybrid of two native species. It does occur in the wild, the hybrid. And birds will love you.
There you go. Good luck, Bill. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Mary in Brandon next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question in terms of butterfly bush. I know you just talked about it, and I planted it for years, and I have many, many native plants, and I have butterfly weed, and I have common milkweed, but I do have butterflies, but I've never attracted as many as I did when I had that butterfly bush. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're not hardy. I'm wondering if I put it in a big pot and took the pot in the winter, whether I could overwinter it.
Okay, you're from Brandon. I'm not sure where that is.
Round 4, near Fond du Lac.
Fond du Lac, okay. In fact, I have a butterfly bush, and I keep it in a pot, and I put it on my patio during the summer, and it blooms and attracts butterflies. And then I put it in my garage, actually, in the winter.
Okay.
Because, yeah, you're right. If it's in a container, it's not going to survive on your patio.
Well, it didn't survive in the ground either.
Yeah.
Wouldn't do it, but I thought about putting it in the basement then.
Yeah, you could put it in a basement as long as it's unheated.
It is heated, and it's got egress windows, so you wouldn't put it in there. You just take it into the garage.
Yeah, that's what I do with mine.
I put it on I don't know if you do this, but I would put it on a piece of wood because the floor
can get cold.
Get really cold. Yeah.
And, you know, I've measured temperatures in my garage during the winter, and it rarely gets below 35 degrees. So, and then I bring them out in the spring, and boom, they bloom.
Away they go.
Yeah.
Can I ask one other quick question?
Sure.
I have hibiscus that I got at Garden Expo. They're not the native, the hardy ones. And I brought them in every year. And this year I put them out, and I think the rabbits somewhat girdled them. It's not girdled all the way around. They have not died. They're still blooming. But I'm wondering whether this year, do I just let them go or do I try to bring... I take those into the basement in the wintertime and bring them out in the spring, and they're wonderful. But is this true? Should I just let them go now?
No. I mean, if they're still blooming, and that one I would not put in the garage because that is a tropical hibiscus.
I know.
The basement's better.
It's 5 years I've kept them alive, so they're happy campers. But this year, the rabbits decided they wanted to chew on them.
You know what? I'd keep them for another year just to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would too. Why not?
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary. Appreciate the call. You never know. I think she might get some good luck there. Kate in Menasha, your turn. Hi, Kate.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment, gosh, I don't know if there's anything wrong with this plant, but I have Russian sage in my front terrace, and of course it's extremely hardy. You almost can't get rid of it once it's started. And the bees love it, and so do birds. I mean, and they use those plants late, late into the season. So is there something, I mean, first I want to recommend it, and then ask, is there something wrong with it in our landscape? Or
no, there's nothing wrong with Russian sage in the landscape. I actually used to have it in one garden bed. I actually dug it up because it was so aggressive. It just kind of spread all over the place. It's not invasive out in the wild or anything like that. And it is kind of like a dieback shrub because parts of it are woody, the base. And I think it's a great drought tolerant. Boy, is that thing drought tolerant. And it blooms for couple months, so you always have this beautiful color even after the flowers are gone. The old flower stalks have a silver color to it and can be kind of interesting in the fall, but then you cut it back and it'll bloom next spring. I mean, it's a great plant.
It is, and even it smells. I mow beside it. It smells great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I disturb all the bees. They don't care. They just go right back to it. So.
It's
all right, thank you.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Thanks a lot, Kate. Appreciate it. And let's go to Joe in Eau Claire next. Joe, your turn. Hi,
yeah.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. See, I have a backyard, and I have a fence line that runs east and west where I have a a row of cedars growing, and over the years the cedars on the bottom have, you know, lost their leaves and that, and so I've trimmed that down. I have sort of like maybe a 3-foot gap from the ground up to the cedars, and I'm trying to figure out, just more or less for a privacy thing, what could I grow there? Like, could I put some alpine currant or something like that right next to the cedars that would grow, or will I get too much shade? Or,
well, one of my questions. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, what might grow in a situation like that? Because the other thing is, it's quite shaded. Most of that fence line is quite shaded because I have a 2-story house. So when it comes, you know, it has to, before it gets sun in the back there, it's got to be noon almost. And then, of course, the rest of it will get it in the afternoon sun. But,
and if you want to combine, yeah, and you want to combine that with sort of a screening type situation, that could be difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you say cedars, are these junipers or are they arborvitae?
I think they're, I don't know that much about it. I'm going,
okay.
Junipers.
Does, are they prickly?
They're green all year round. They're,
are they prickly?
No, they're more of a flat leaf.
Okay, that sounds like arborvitae. And when you take the foliage and you rub it between your hands, it has a really nice smell to it. Okay, with something like that, you know, it's curious why it's losing its lower leaves. Do you have problems with deer or rabbits?
I get deer and rabbits, but that isn't the problem. I just think I've seen that before on these types of trees where I think, again, they can grow up, it gets shaded, the lower branches don't get as much sunlight.
Right. Well, I mean, are you looking more for a shrub or a perennial?
I mean, well, I thought maybe a shrub that would grow, you know, 4 or 5 feet high and eventually, you know,
that tall.
Fill that in. So
okay.
That, and then the other thought was that eventually these things will, I'm thinking, will die out. And if then I took the cedars out, I'd have a nice hedgerow or
sure.
something else.
Sure, okay. That gives me a better idea. I thought you were looking for like hostas or something to plant around the base, but since you want something a little bit taller, and you did mention alpine currant, I do not suggest that one. That is a full sun plant. It needs a lot of light. So you're looking for something that can tolerate partial shade. I mean, the red twig dogwoods, though some cultivars get quite big. Red twig dogwoods, there's a whole bunch of them on the market. It's a native plant. Though actually the one I like better is not native, but it has better resistance to leaf spot, and the color of the twigs are just the brightest, like lipstick cranberry red. They're beautiful. And that one is called Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge, just like the city in Louisiana. Baton Rouge Tartarian Dogwood. It's Cornus alba, A-L-B-A. And that one is readily available. I know Bailey Nurseries sells that, and they distribute plants all over the country. That one in particular, I have in shade, and it's done well, despite it being, you know, doing better in full sun, but I have not had any leaf spot on that. It's a great plant. That's just one suggestion. There's,
do you know how tall that gets?
That one in particular is smaller than some of the others. It's about 4 to 5 feet.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Right.
So that sounds about perfect for what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Baton Rouge, and it's a dogwood.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Shrub dogwood.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just one suggestion. There's many, many other plants that you could use. I'd have to see the area to really be able to tell. But what county are you in?
Eau Claire.
Yeah. Call the Eau Claire County Extension Office. They're county agents. That's their job. That's what they do, is they help with homeowner phone calls. And they can give you suggestions. And I'm not sure what local nurseries are around your place.
Yeah. Okay. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Amy and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Amy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just have some ideas for the guy with the hanging basket.
Sure.
My sister sells plant hangers, and so she's done a lot of work with trying to figure out how to make the hanging baskets really pretty. And that one of the things is, if you can, don't actually plant right in your decorative basket. Because if you can just put the plastic pot that the plants come in there, you can switch it out when the plants start looking bad really easily.
Right.
You just take the plastic basket out, and you put the next one in.
Yeah.
you know.
Absolutely.
For example, you can start with pansies in the spring, something else in the summer, and then mums in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes good
and
sense.
Yeah,
and the other thing, and plus that way the plastic basket insulates, the decorative pot insulates the plastic basket against the sun. You don't need to water them as often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good point.
And the other thing is in the fall, when all the plants die, just take out the plants, get yourself some evergreen boughs.
Yeah.
Make sure they have fresh cuts on the end, stick them in there, and mm-hmm. water it until the ground, until the dirt freezes. And those
right.
things will stay green most of the winter.
Oh, yeah. I've done that. I've used sand and get the sand, you know, wet, and then stick your evergreen branches in, as well as like a red twig dogwood or something that
yeah.
has some color to it that looks really beautiful, as well as winterberry. I have winterberry at home, and I'll put some in a pot with the evergreens and red twig dogwood, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah
you can just do it in the dirt that that's in the
yeah,
pot
yeah
that you were
sure.
plant out of too. You don't need to do anything special.
Yeah.
But it, that way, you and then you can put a red bow on it if you want it, or whatever, you know, whatever color goes with your house.
Yeah.
You've got winter decorations. So.
Yeah. The reason why I use sand is so the pot doesn't tip over with the winter winds.
Oh.
So
it's heavy.
One, it doesn't, but if it's a hanging one, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, if the basket's hanging, it won't matter.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you want something heavy in there because, yeah, otherwise it'll... tip over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good suggestions, Amy. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate the call. And by the way, it's finally open lines again, a couple anyway. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, and the title of the page is The Larry Mealer Show. And let's go to Chris in Darlington. Chris, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I've got two questions. One question is, I live in a house that has a lot of campus vine, and I took some cutting off the campus vine that's flowering, and I was wondering, if I took the cutting off a flowering vine, how long will it take for the plant that I plant to flower?
Okay, that's a very good question. Campus vine, it's also known as trumpet creeper. It is a very aggressive vine. It is considered by some to be invasive because the pods open up and they release a million seeds, plus it spreads by root suckers. However, it is a U.S. native plant, and it is absolutely gorgeous in flower. The problem that you're saying you want to propagate it, you could dig up some of those root suckers and separate it from the main plant and plant those root suckers, and they will flower. It may take a couple years for them to get to flower again, but if you take a cutting from a branch that is flowering, a lot of that energy has been pushed into the flower itself. It may not have enough energy left. Though campsis is a pretty rampant vine that, again, if you just dig up some of those root suckers, you'll have it. And it's already got roots.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. So, and I got a second question, which is I was at Olbert Gardens, and they had some just enormous rosemaries. And I have a hard time keeping my rosemaries when I bring them inside in the fall.
Yeah, welcome to the club. I've tried to, and rosemaries, I mean, they need a lot of light in your house, and most homes don't have enough. But if you cut them back but leave some foliage, and just kind of lightly water them. I mean, they don't need much water indoors. In fact, most people kill them from overwatering. But they need let the soil dry partially in between watering. You might have to water it maybe once a month indoors, unless the heat's on, then maybe a little bit more often. But put in as much light as possible. But they often look pretty spindly indoors in the wintertime.
Does it?
Did you miss them at all?
No, actually, that is a Mediterranean plant, and by keeping the foliage wet, you may see some issues with mildew. So keep the foliage dry.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had someone who wanted you to repeat the name of the hybrid plant that flowers white in June, and then has orangish foliage.
That fall color foliage.
Yeah.
And that is called Service Berry. Service Berry. And it's also known as Juneberry.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an Amelanchier species. It's Amelanchier X grandiflora. But everybody in the nursery trade, they know what service berry is. And the fruit is delicious once it turns purple, but the robins are going to try to beat you. And they did this year for me.
There you go. Let's go to Bart in Milwaukee. Bart, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey there. Question for you. I have a Canadian hemlock in my backyard. Mm-hmm. I live on the far east side of Milwaukee near the lake. It's kind of on a fence line. And we have a pretty high density of squirrels over there. And I had a couple last winter that I don't know if they just were off their cycle or something, but they were building a nest almost like they were going to have babies or something. And they literally just denuded this tree and kept, you know, dropping branches in my patio and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There was probably half of the branches made it to the nest, which I knocked down. They built it again. So this tree is a little, I don't want to say distressed, but the canopy was pretty diffuse to begin with, and now it's, you know, really lacking. I mean, you have very spindly branches. Basically, mm-hmm. the full branches are intact, but all the little ones that came off it from the main tree out, they chewed a lot of them off. Does that type of tree degenerate, or rather regenerate, at all, or am I kind of out of luck?
Yeah, actually, hemlock, as well as arborvitae, I've seen them prune back pretty hard, and they have come back. However, I don't recommend taking all the foliage off your plant. Obviously, it has to have some foliage there to photosynthesize. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you're going into the fall, this isn't the time of year to cut them back.
This is a 20-something foot, you know, tall tree. I mean, I guess the branches as is intact, are they going to regenerate at all, or do they only regenerate from hard pruning?
That's a good question. Once the branches get really big, no, they don't regenerate.
Okay.
However, if you go farther out on the branch where it gets a little bit thinner, those can regenerate. I have seen that in hemlock. And a lot of very formal gardens have hemlocks as hedges.
Okay.
And they shear them every about mid-spring after the new flush has come out, and then they shear them, and they get bushier and bushier. This is going to be a long-term process for you, and you might want to get a certified arborist out there to give you a quote, because if it's 20 feet tall, you should not be climbing it.
Yeah, and I mean, it looks good. It just looks really spindly.
Yeah.
It did produce new growth off the ends and stuff like that, so I guess I'll kind of just wait and see. Quick comment on the rosemary question that the gal had before me. I've had a lot of success. I have a very sunny window in my basement, and it seems like the cool temperature down there and the sun in the winter, and then a minimal amount of watering. I've had a lot of success with overwintering.
That's great.
In the house itself, no luck at all, but you know, it's a cool old basement with a really sunny window. So.
Yep.
Oh, very good point. Thanks a lot for calling, Bard.
Okay, no problem. Take care.
Yep, take care. Gary in Augusta, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi, glad to hear from you. Glad you took my call. I wanted to respond to the gentleman that called from Eau Claire that has to replace his spruce-like evergreens.
Yeah.
There is a nursery that I went to in Augusta. I'm only about 20 miles east of Eau Claire. The nursery's name is Paint Creek Nursery.
Mm-hmm.
That country, you'll have to go and look it up. They do have a website. But what I did is on my property is I had to put up kind of a wind barrier, and my first line of trees, I put in nine bark and a flowering dogwood. And I especially like the nine bark. It's gorgeous. They both attract a lot of birds. I have such a large variety of songbirds. It's incredible. But I don't trim them or anything. They're in, you know, a windbreak, and they're about each nine bark is about 10 feet wide and about 7 to 8 feet high.
Okay. Is it the green leaf form or purple leaf?
It's green leaf.
Okay. Yeah, nine barks are excellent plants. It's one of the most drought-tolerant shrubs out there. It's amazing. The drought of 2012, they looked fine. They didn't skip a beat. It's a native plant. I like the purple ones. My favorite is summer wine. And the reason why I like summer wine so much is it is probably the least susceptible cultivar to party mildew, because nine barks need full sun and good air circulation or they will get mildew. Mm. And the summer wine has purple leaves. I have a couple in my yard, and they're just gorgeous plants. Now, when you said flowering dogwood, this is where common names can get confusing. The true flowering dogwood is Cornus florida, and that is not hardy in Wisconsin. It is in Milwaukee, but not much past that. So you might be thinking of like the red twig dogwoods, perhaps, or even the gray dogwood.
To tell you, I planted them in 2003. That was a drought back then, too, and they all survived. Mm-hmm. But I do not recall which dogwood it was.
Yeah. Does it have fruit?
They do not.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
The other one, there is a dwarf red-tipped dogwood that it doesn't really have much for flowers or fruit, but that one only gets about 4 to 5 feet. Or not even 5 feet. It's more 3 to 4.
It's a mystery.
Yeah.
Have you got a good photo?
It's a beautiful photo. They're very full. May be that I haven't noticed the fruit.
If you can take a picture of it and post it up on our Facebook page, we could even take a look at it and probably identify it for you.
And get a close-up of the twigs with the buds. Okay. I've gotten a lot of pictures this last couple weeks, and they're of the leaf only, and I really need to see the twig with the buds to determine if it's opposite or alternate. And fruit is always a great thing to take a picture of. That is a dead giveaway as to what the species is.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. I'm Larry Mueller. Laura Jull, our on-air, our Michelle Johnson's our on-air producer. Laura Jull is our guest as we talk with her about the fall plants that bring color, and is answering a whole bunch of other questions as well, right here on the Ideas Network for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with Laura Jull, UW Extension horticulturist and a member of the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. We'll go right back to the phones and talk to Adam and Nina next. Hi, Adam.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question. A while back, I was listening to a segment about invasive species, and my backyard has been slowly but surely overcome by Bohemian knotweed.
Oh.
And I'm wondering if fall is a good time to start to eradicate and how to eradicate.
Oh, man, I feel your pain. The knotweed in general is just an obnoxious weed. It spreads by seed and also spreads quite readily by underground rhizomes and root suckers coming up everywhere. And this is going to be a challenge to get rid of it. It's going to take a number of years. I'll just forewarn you. And fall is a good time to get rid of it because a lot of the sugars are transferred down to the root systems for overwintering. And what people have done is I've seen them cut, you know, because it's almost like bamboo is to cut. Pardon?
Oh, I was bamboo.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was cut the stalks, but leave about 6 inches behind, and then immediately treat it with a systemic herbicide. And it has to be systemic. And if it's just contact, it won't get down to the root system. But if you spray these plants right after you cut it, that systemic herbicide will be transferred to the root system and will start to kill it. Bohemian knotweed is a weed that, like the old Timex commercials, it takes a licking, it keeps on ticking. This plant will resprout again next spring. And the thing is as it's resprouting next spring, you need to spray it again. It's to get, you know, to really stress that plant out. And you're going to have to continue as soon as you see shoots coming back up again next year, spray them immediately. And it's going to be a long battle because those rhizomes can extend far away from the center of the plant. To areas where you didn't even think it was.
Oh, boy.
It's a hard one.
It's overtaking what was ferns underneath, and if I cut them back through the summer, the ferns survive. However, with systemic, should I transplant those ferns out of there?
Well, if you're just applying it, the product right to the cut stems of the knotweed and nothing else, then they'll be okay. However, if you're doing any type of spray where you're just spraying on top of the plants and the ferns are nearby, you've got issues with drift. You've got issues with possibly the leaves come in contact. You could move the ferns, but I would be very careful spraying anything around the ferns.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was a difficult process.
Oh, it's awful.
Be a clear cut and throw a tarp down for a year or two and just completely kill off everything.
Well, it comes back. You'd be surprised. I've seen
it hang around for a long time.
Oh, I've seen people burn it. I've seen people cover it up, and it just, boink, you know, it comes right back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how it got back there or where it came from, but it's
awful. It's awful.
It's awful, no doubt about it. Thanks, Adam. Thank you for calling, and good luck.
And it's on the DNR NR40 list of invasive species. You can no longer purchase or distribute or grow it. And if you have it in your yard, I highly suggest getting rid of it. Even the dwarf knotweed, both of them highly invasive.
Thomas in Manitowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, I have a question and a comment. I have a Cornus alternifolia.
Yep, pagoda dogwood.
Yeah, it's just a great tree. It has all kinds of blooms and berries on it. And the mm-hmm. birds, when they turn purple, there are so many squirrels and mm-hmm. birds in there. Within 3 days, they've got all the food off of our tree. They're just wild about it. But on that same tree, we have a lot of bird feeders, and the squirrels are constantly going up and down, and we have tons of woodpeckers eating on the suet. Now, they like to pick on the bark on there, and with all the squirrels going up and down as a result of that, it has a lot of scar tissue on it, and the tree is really healthy, and it's about 6 inches. I was just wondering, Will it be able to build up enough scar tissue on the bark to survive all that abuse, or is that...
Let me tell you first thing. Pagoda dogwood is extremely susceptible to golden canker, and it's caused by a fungus. I see it on almost every pagoda dogwood tree I see, even stuff in the woods. And it is, whenever you have damage to a limb or an opening, that is a prime entry point for this fungus. And you'll see whole stems just die over time, not right away. And you'll see on the trunk or in the branches, you'll see that off golden color to the twigs. And that's the golden canker. And if you see that, you have to prune that out because that just serves as inoculum for the rest of the plant. And you want to go at least 6 to 8 inches past where you see the discoloration of the wood. Because what happens is it moves down the stem and can get to the main trunk. And once it's in the trunk, that whole branch or that whole tree is gone. And so I would not hang bird feeders from a pagoda dogwood. That's really sensitive. And plus, if you're hanging bird feeders, you don't want to be girdling the stems either. And you'd be amazed at how quickly, you know, wire or any other type of material surrounding the branch can girdle. You have to use something that is very flexible and can move on the branch and is not tight.
Yeah,
we've had them in there for 15 years. It's doing great, but it's probably not that long-lived of a tree anyway.
No,
right?
It's not, unfortunately. Yeah. It's beautiful, though. It's a nice native, but boy, are they hard to grow.
Yeah.
As soon as they get drought-stressed, boom, they get the golden canker.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Darlene in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, good morning. My question is about our oak leaf hydrangea.
Mm-hmm.
This spring, it looked beautiful, came out with lots of blossoms on it, and, I would say 6 to 8 weeks ago, I noticed about two-thirds or three-fourths of it, the blossoms were turning black instead of filling out, and the leaves have prematurely curled up and have turned color and are droopy.
Okay.
I also have noticed, though, just recently that along the stems, there's a lot of new growth coming. So I don't know if that's a good sign.
Okay.
But, I just don't know. I've had it for 15 years. And,
right. Does it flower for you?
Part of it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they flower in the summertime, oak leaf hydrangeas. And they, just to let the audience know, oak leaf hydrangeas are a hydrangea that the leaves look like an oak leaf. They're very unique. Mm-hmm. And it has this phenomenal burgundy red fall color mm-hmm. in the fall. And white flowers in the summer. Now, one thing about oak leaf hydrangea, it is marginally hardy. Here around Madison, we can grow it, but sometimes it doesn't even flower for us. Depends. At Elbrick, they have no problems, but that's kind of like a microclimate. Now, oak leaf hydrangea is one that needs really good soil, moist, well-drained, organic-type soil that's on the slightly acidic side. If the pH is too high, then they can get what's called chlorosis, where the leaf turns yellow and the veins remain green. Oak leaf hydrangea, I do want to mention this to my audience. I don't want to forget to mention this. I am so upset about Japanese beetles eating my yard. And for some reason, they have decided to attack my flowers on my hydrangeas. And I have the panicle hydrangeas. And, you know, the beautiful white flower ones that can turn pink at the bottom. And the interesting to note, the panicle hydrangeas, Hydrangea paniculata, those cultivars and those plants have poisonous leaves. So the Japanese beetles don't go to the leaves. They actually go to the flowers, and they turn the flowers brown. So that could be one of the problems with your oak leaf, because these little pesky buggers, they really do a job. Now you're saying the leaves are curling. It, you know, have you had any rabbit injury?
No, it's not. They're higher up on the plant. I mean, it's pretty tall, so
okay.
It's, you know, the leaves are higher up. And I was just looking at the flowers, and the flowers are intact. It's just that they never developed.
Yeah.
And part of them turned black.
Okay, it sounds like there could be some vascular problem. Yeah. I would get a sample off to Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic here at UW-Madison, and if you just Google UW-Madison. Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and they have a whole thing on the web of how to send samples to them. You're going to want just more than just a leaf. You probably want the whole branch, including the flower.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, we should talk a little bit about fall planting, because we haven't talked much about fall planting yet.
Yeah, fall is a great time to plant many trees and shrubs. When it comes to evergreens, I'm a little more conservative. I don't like to plant evergreens past end of September, only because they are so prone to winter burn. They're not established yet, and with evergreen foliage, if we have a dry winter or a very windy, bitter cold winter, you'll see a lot of winter burn injury or dieback. I do know people that plant them in October and say it's great, but I'd just be a little cautious on that. Now, when it comes to deciduous trees and shrubs, fall is a good time to plant. As long as certain species don't like to be fall dug, meaning the nursery harvests it in the fall, there's a number of species that don't do well with fall planting. Whereas others, if you basically dig the plant in the nursery person dug the plant in summer and is holding them or growing them in a container, those are fine to plant now because you've harvested the whole root system. Or as much as possible, I should say. But there are a number of plants you can plant right now that they don't have the heat stress issues with this wet year that we've had. They don't have drought stress issues. And the leaves will eventually drop, and then the plant will concentrate most of its energy into producing new roots.
There we go. Jim in Caledonia, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I listen to your program all the time.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
I've got a mountain ash in my backyard,
mm-hmm.
and there are a series of holes mm-hmm. that look like someone took an eighth-inch drill bit and went around the entire base of the tree.
How does your tree look?
The tree looks pretty good, but some of the smaller branches seem to be dying back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It could be a number of issues. Mountain ash itself is a species that has a lot of disease and insect problems. It's not one that I typically recommend to folks because they're short-lived trees. Mm-hmm. And those holes are probably sapsucker injury. It's a bird that basically goes along the trunk trying to get either sap, or there could be borers inside your tree, and there are other birds that are looking for those borers. Is your plant in full sun? Is it, you know, mulched, well-watered? Those are the big things to keep a plant healthy. I'm not in favor of fertilizing trees that are sick, as in diseases or insects, because a lot of the energy is used for nutrient uptake instead of defense. But if your plant still looks fine, that's probably just sapsuckers.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lots of things going on today on Garden Talk. Our guest today is Laura Jowell. Laura is a professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals. She works out of the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison and stops by pretty often. Always love to see her. And we've been talking about plants for fall color. Laura Jowell, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, losing my voice here temporarily. Hopefully it won't last for long. But you know what? You don't want to listen to me anyway. You want to listen to my guest, Laura Jowell. We're talking about woody ornamentals and other fall plantings with her. And I hope you'll join in the conversation with your own questions. The number is 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And, Laura, let's go right back to the phones and to Amanda in Fort Atkinson. Amanda, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Laura, for having me. I love this show. You guys are talking about fall plants, and I have to say I love my herb garden in the fall. Bring such beautiful aromatics and color. Everything seems to come back pretty hardy the following year. But I have noticed that I have several varieties of mint. And the last 2 years, they just haven't been coming back the way I'd like them to. And I've had to supplement or plant more mint in to bring them back. Now, right now, it's just beautiful. I have all my mint, and they're doing great. I was wondering, what is the best way to winter my mint so maybe I don't have to supplement again next year?
That's a interesting question. I'm trying to get rid of my mint because it's taking over the herb garden. It is so aggressive. You think you got all of it and you leave a little tiny piece of the root system and you get a new plant. It's pretty rampant. I don't do anything to my mint. It comes back reliably every single year, whether I want it to or not.
Do you have it potted?
No, I don't. It is in the ground.
Yeah. Is your soil well-drained?
It's not the best soil, I will admit. I do not own my home. I rent, and I do have a little patch of area by my home. And so I try to do the best I can with the space that I have. And so I try to plant things that are a bit more hardy, like my chive and my sage and, you know, things of that nature. And my mint, I mean, I've been there 7 years, and it's always done really well. But the last couple of years, it just hasn't made it.
Well, I know mint requires, you know, well-drained soil. They don't like it wet at all. So if there's, and geez, we've only had rain every other day practically this year. It might not be draining well. And because of that, you might get some root rot or some dieback. There's a variety of mints on the market. Some might be more hardier than others. I just have the regular mint, and it comes back very reliably. So I would look at the moisture issues on that one.
I think that may be the issue.
I think it
got quite a bit of rain just this spring.
Yeah.
And it was coming up great, and then the rain early this spring, I think, may have hampered it out, and I think that might be exactly what the problem was.
If it's sitting in water, I mean, if the soil is so poorly drained or high in clay, it's not going to do well. It needs full sun.
Yeah. There you go. Good luck, Amanda. Thank you very much for calling. Tina, or I'm sorry, Tim on Facebook wants to know if phlox blooms again in late summer or if there are different varieties.
It depends on the phlox. There's a number of different species of phlox on the market. If you're talking about their traditional large phlox that have that huge flower cluster at the top of the branches in summer, I've had some that bloomed heavily, and one of my favorites is called Glamour Girl. And Glamour Girl is one that comes back and it flowers and is less susceptible to powdery mildew. I don't want to say they're resistant because nothing, if it's a bad year like we've had, you may see some mildew. But if you cut off the old flowers after they're done flowering, you may get a couple side shoots that flower, but nothing as spectacular as the first display. There are other phlox that bloom only in spring, such as creeping phlox, for example. But I don't know of any fall flowering phlox. Usually you have your long bloom period of phlox. They may, you know, removing the old flowers, it may come back with a couple more flowers, but it's not going to be the same show as the original.
Lots of phlox in my neighborhood right now.
Oh, they're
really
gorgeous.
Great. Wonderful.
So fragrant.
Tim and Marinette, it's your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I have a small red maple about 8 feet that I planted in my yard a couple of years ago. And my daughter and son-in-law are now in need of a tree, and I'd like to know when the best time to dig it up and transplant it.
Okay. Not in the fall. Red maple as well as Freeman maple, those are two maples in particular that do not like to be dug in the fall. They have very poor transplant success, and you may get a lot of dieback. However, those species can be dug before they leaf out in spring or after full leaf expansion in June. You don't want to be digging any tree when they're starting to leaf out. That's the worst time to transplant them. You know, I would recommend getting a soil test because red maples need slightly acid soils. And down here in Madison, we have some beautiful ones at the Arboretum, but as street trees and in most people's yards where the pH is above 7, they don't do well. How about planting a new one?
That's a thought, too.
And that might be a lot easier on your back.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Donna in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, yeah. Sure.
Hi. I got 60-foot of lilac in the backyard. My dad planted them 63 years ago, and passed away, but I neglected them. But they got carpenter ants in that, and then I got squirrels and everything. I feed all these critters, birds and stuff, and I got, like, 6 squirrels in the yard, and they're running up and down the trees, and I know there's gnawing on them and everything, mm-hmm. I'm wondering, there is some stress on the plants mm-hmm. themselves, and I was wondering, what can I do, or is there anything I can do to save them? I just don't know.
Okay. Now, it sounds like these are very old lilac bushes, and mm-hmm. to be honest, the best way to handle old lilac bushes is what we call renewal pruning, and mm-hmm. that is removing about a third of the largest diameter branches back to the base of the plant, and it sounds like these have huge stems, correct?
We used to do that. My dad used to do that, and my brother, and we used to do that. We used to come down to about 5 feet, 6 feet. Yes, we used to do that, you know, periodically.
Well, I actually cut them back all the way to the base of the plant, and the one of the reasons why is as lilac, and not all lilacs have this type of pruning, okay? But the old French lilacs, those branches need to be cut off at the base of the plant because as those branches get bigger, they've become more susceptible to lilac borer. And lilac borer will cause dieback of branches, poor flowering. And not only that, you want some of that suckering growth to come back because that suckering growth, I let it go for about 4 or 5 years. And then I do some selective removal of even those branches because you always want to have some young branches coming up. They bloom better after a couple years. And they also are, the flowers are at eye and nose level. yeah. so you can enjoy them. But if they're really huge, overgrown lilacs, you're going to want to start to do renewal pruning. I do have a fact sheet on the horticulture website, as well as the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic website. It's called How to Properly Prune Your Deciduous Shrubs, and lilacs are one of them. The best time to do it, I know if you do it in the late winter, early spring, you are removing some flower buds, but quite frankly, I find that the best time to get in there and see what you're doing. Especially if it's old and overgrown, you want to remove those larger, about a third at a time, the largest diameter branches. You don't have to do it every year, but you'll start to get sucker growth, and that will come back and bloom even better.
I had another expert on a couple of weeks ago who said exactly the same thing about winter pruning. You're going to lose a few, but
it's such a great time
so
to prune.
It's so much easier to
do it. It's so much easier, and there's no mosquitoes.
Yeah. so there you go.
Or you could wait until after they're done flowering. But
cut about a third.
Yeah.
Right at the base.
Right, those larger branches,
and you're
not
gonna
the young
be,
ones.
You're going to be amazed, Donna. I think you'll really be surprised. Good luck. Thank you so much. Al in DeForest is up next. Hi, Al.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I have a problem. I have a weeping willow that did not leaf out this spring.
Hmm.
It's about 10 years old, completely healthy. We had a very mild winter here last year, so I'm kind of bothered as to why an established tree just did not leaf out and died.
Okay. Weeping willows, as well as many of the willows, have a lot of disease problems, and stem cankers are right up there, and they can kill a plant. And willows, weeping willows, are just as susceptible. Another thing, when you're planting weeping, any of the tree willows, keep them as far as possible away from your house and foundation, because the roots are so aggressive. They can ruin your foundation and also bust up sewer pipes if they find a crack and the root grows in it and enlarges. It can cause a lot of damage. In fact, many cities have ordinances against planting willows because of that. Now, your weeping willow is not very old. It sounds like it's been well established. So it could be a number of issues, and you can always get a sample to Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic on campus of UW-Madison, and he can take a look at it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it had some canker.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll look him up on the internet and see what I can do.
All right. Thanks a lot. Just along with that, Jackie had sent us a note on Facebook wondering how to start a weeping willow tree from a tree cutting.
Very easy.
Yeah, stick it in the ground.
Stick it in the ground, yeah, especially in the spring. I would wait till spring to do that. And one of the reasons why is willows contain salicylic acid, which is the precursor to producing aspirin. And the willows are very easy to root, and you need to make sure to keep them moist. And I would do it in the spring.
Let's go to Marilyn in South Range. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I have a question about pruning. I have a Tardiva hydrangea, and another one that I don't remember the variety, but it's white, and then the flowers turn pink.
Okay.
And the Tardiva is maybe 10 years old, and it's probably about 10 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Every spring I try to prune out some of the branches, but it's getting to be just too tall,
as
you know, the whole thing.
Sure.
How much could I prune off of it, and when would you do that?
Okay. I have panicle hydrangeas at home. Tardiva is a older cultivar. It flowers pretty late into August.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter what cultivar of the panicle hydrangeas. Those are, again, hydrangea paniculata. Those types, I wait until early spring. And I prune them back to, as far as I want, but you don't want to cut it back to the ground. You don't want to do that with the panicle hydrangeas, but bringing the branches down and pruning into older wood, make sure you are doing that back to a node or back where buds are. Don't leave a little stick behind. And I prune out about 12 inches, sometimes only 6 inches each year. And by selecting branches, you can have bigger blooms versus more small blooms.
Okay. The other one is taking over. I have two Northern Lights Northern Lights azaleas that I think because they bloom in the spring, mm-hmm. that I can still see them, but by fall, they take over.
Well, hydrangeas aren't aggressive at all, but they get big. Some of them can, like Limelight, and some of the other ones can get, 8 feet tall easily, whereas azaleas, and good for you for having Northern Light azaleas, those aren't easy. You must have great soil, but azaleas grow slow. So they almost need to be in front of the hydrangeas because the hydrangeas will grow too large and block the view.
Mm, there we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You're breaking up a little bit, Marilyn, there, but thank you again for your call. Pat in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Say, I hope that the answer is that there are more than one species of this tree. The city put a London plane tree in our terrace this late spring to replace an old tree that fell two summers ago. And it's really only about 20 feet from our doorstep. What I look up online is that the London plane tree has a crown of like 60 to 80 feet, and when I spoke with the city gentleman there, he said, well, there's a new species, or this isn't that species, they just haven't updated the internet yet to reflect the smaller size of the other species of the London plane tree, and I wondered if you knew anything about that species of tree, and is that possible that it's not going to be dwarfing our house
Trees add a lot of benefits, and that is eventually when it gets larger will be your air conditioning, mm-hmm. and there's significant savings you'll have on your energy bills by having trees near your home. Not 20 feet away is enough, but I wouldn't go for that big of a tree. London plane tree is a big tree. It's not as big as our native American sycamore, which can get up to 100 feet tall. That one is gigantic. But London plane, the best newer selection out there is called Exclamation. Just like the word, the mm-hmm. Mark, Exclamation. But that one still gets, 50, 60 feet tall. It's not a little tree.
No, it's definitely not a little tree. So, you might just check and ask them the name of the London plane that they put in.
But that's the most common cultivar they're using now.
Yeah.
Because it's anthracnose resistant.
Ah, so there you go.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks a lot. Dan in Superior, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, I got a question. I was thinking on propagating some hickories and some oak trees from actual acorns and hickory nuts.
Yeah.
And I know that squirrels do this all the time. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if there was any kind of tricks or tips that you guys might have to speed it along.
Sure. Now, one thing about acorns in particular from oaks, they have this type of seed that if they dry out, they will not germinate.
Right. Okay. So you'd probably have to get them like not soon after they fell
drop
from the tree.
Right. Do you know what kind of oak it is?
Well, I'd like to get some white and some red oak.
Okay.
I know that red oaks only shed their oaks or their acorns, every 2 years?
Well, yeah, but if they have some, it takes 2 years for them to mature. So you will have acorns every year, but just they have to be 2 years old before they drop. So you may have some higher up in the tree.
Right.
Now, one question I have is oak wilt. Do you live near natural areas where there's a lot of oak wilt?
I know oak wilt is around, but I honestly couldn't tell you if it's like a bad problem around here.
Yeah. Just be a little careful about that if you have any natural areas around, because
especially
I love oaks. Yeah, especially the red oak group. They're more, well, actually both groups, white and red oak, are equally susceptible to oak wilt. With the white oak group, if you catch it early enough, you can have your trees treated. Oak wilt can kill a plant in 1 year. I've seen big trees of red oak at the Arboretum that just came down within a year. Hickory nuts don't have as strict of moisture requirements in terms of if they dry out, they can still germinate, but you have to hydrate them. There's a number of really good books out there on propagating trees, and I would suggest getting one. I know with acorns, I teach a plant propagation class, and we've had a hard time getting the oaks to germinate, and I just decided not to use them anymore because, you know, they've probably been dried out too much in shipping and so on.
Right.
Yeah. But the red oak group, those acorns will germinate, and just like the squirrels, they're wonderful propagators. They plant them in the ground, and up comes a new plant.
Yeah, they just don't always plant them where you want them.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Roxy in Casco, your turn. Hi, Roxy.
Good morning or good afternoon. Calling to find out what type of a shrub and what type of a tree would be a good one to plant in dry sandy soil up in Oconto County.
Oh, I was just in Oconto this past weekend visiting my aunt and uncle. Well, in that area, it's very sandy soil. Is there any moisture, or is it just like beach sand?
There's a little bit of moisture, but, you know, it'd be planting it at the cottage, and, of course, we're not going to be there all the time to water it either.
Right. Well, you know, oaks, as you know, do fine up there, and you see a lot of red oak, northern red oaks. You'll also see white oaks up there. The white oaks like a little moister soil. Black oak is another one. White pine, eastern white pine, is native all over the place up there, and that can tolerate sandier soil as long as it's has a little bit of moisture in it. Some other species that you can grow just about anything. Sandy soil can be amended with peat moss or topsoil. And you can grow just about anything in it. The main issue is it's well drained, and so you might even get away with if you have some good organic matter with some northern light azaleas, because that's their biggest downfall is if the soil's too heavy, they get root rot.
Azaleas,
yes, and they need acid soil, and in that part of the state, I know for a fact the soil is acidic. You can grow a number of different shrubs. You know, of course, junipers like sandy soil, but that's not a flowering shrub for your area. There's a lot of. I think we're out of time.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities there, though. And thank you so much for calling. And Laura, thank you so much as
well. Thank you, Larry. And I'd like to tell the audience, if you have any homeowner questions, please call your county extension office, as they're the ones that answer homeowner questions and are there to help you.
Laura Jelp, extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison, our guest. Great to have her with us. We'll have her back and do it again. Monday at 11, we'll take a look at eyeglasses with Jim LaLuzerne, and then Mike Bino comes on to talk about Wisconsin, our Wisconsin magazine. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.